This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Apparently yesterday was International Cat Day. That's why we had that. There you go. And okay. Audrey, this is for you.
No. Please don't, Rich.
Okay, enough. That's for Jeff Sandu. I know he wanted us to play that a little bit. Anyway, for those of you that are cat owners, and yesterday, and if you're in the US, of course, or that side where it is still yesterday, happy International Cat Day. Anyway, welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Arvind Yuvraj,
Majidah Hashim,
and Audrey Raj.
It's a full house today, ladies and gents, and boy, have we got some news for you. You might have just heard on the news there about iFlix having an injection of $133 million. We've had a press release sent through this morning from TM. And here is the top liner. It says, TM boosts its content proposition with Netflix. TM customers can soon enjoy a wide variety of Netflix's award-winning original TV shows, movies, documentaries, and more. So TM customers who subscribe to the service will become Netflix members, and they will be able to enjoy unlimited viewing of content, including award-winning series such as House of Cards, The Crown, and Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Oh, my word, right? Mm-hmm. So what the heck is going off? Anybody got any suggestions? Because I know we've got a whole bunch of Netflix and streaming news lined up today. Weren't TMT partnered up with iFlix up until fairly recently? Is that correct?
Yeah. If you have like a Unify account, then you get iFlix for free.
Right.
For a year or something. I'm not sure the terms.
So is this the same arrangement with Netflix?
I'm guessing so. I mean, at the bottom of the press release, it does say further details will be announced at a later date, of course. Mm-hmm. But according to Tony Zemakowski, the vice president of business development at Netflix Asia, he says Netflix has something for everyone, from global popular Netflix original series to anime, blah, 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 blah. Through his collaboration with TM, we can now reach out to even more Malaysians who want to watch their favorite shows on Netflix anytime, anywhere, on a big screen or on their mobile device.
Yeah, but it doesn't say Unify. So it doesn't say that they are going to offer Netflix to Unify customers. It just says that people who subscribe for whatever service that they're coming up with will be able to get Netflix with TM.
Right.
So I don't know what that means. I don't know if they get it for a discounted amount, like a fee, or...
There is a brief mention. It says, furthermore, with high-speed internet access powered by Unify, coupled with unlimited data mobility with TM's mobility service provider, Weeby, our customers can fulfill the crave for their favorite movies or shows from Netflix on multiple devices.
Okay.
So they've mentioned Unify in there. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's going to come as part of one of those all-in packages, I don't know.
So it's like a slight add-on to the Unify bill, like $10, $20, you know,
which is still,
still good.
It is, yeah. Right, so we've got a whole bunch of streaming-related stories. Where shall we start?
Let's start.
Arvind, you please kick it off.
Yeah, so the big thing is that Disney has announced that it will no longer stream its content on Netflix starting from 2019.
I didn't even know they did.
Yeah, so they did. They have maybe for us it's not as much, but then in other countries, especially the US, Disney has a lot of content with Netflix. It has all its cartoons, some of its TV shows from Disney XD and Disney Channel and stuff. It also has the Marvel TV stuff, because Disney owns Marvel. It has the Star Wars movies, the Indiana Jones movies. Yeah, all of that stuff is on Netflix. And they say that starting from the end of 2019, they will pull all that content from Netflix.
They're going to pull Indiana Jones from Netflix?
Netflix, oh yeah.
No. And all the Marvel stuff too.
And Star Wars.
And Star Wars.
Yeah.
What?
And the superhero stuff. So what they're saying is, and this ties in with another thing that we're going to talk about in a while, that Disney is launching its own streaming service in 2019. So they're going to launch their own thing, and then they're going to pull all their content off Netflix and then host it on their own streaming service.
Speaking about just keeping it online with Netflix, I was looking at there was a piece today about their stock value.
Yeah.
Since they moved to streaming back in 2007, the value has gone up by 5,110% since adding streaming back in 2007. So in 2002, when they first floated, their share price was $9. It then dropped in 2007 to $3.46. Mm-hmm. And then as of yesterday, it was at $180.27.
Wow. Mm.
They're doing okay. I mean, but they do have a lot of debt, as we mentioned not too long ago, right?
Yeah.
It's in the billions.
It's in the billions. And they're using that money to fund their original content.
Right.
And then I think, Odd, you were saying that their stock prices dropped by...
About more than 5%.
More than 5%.
On Disney's announcement that they're pulling out. Wow. Yeah. Netflix, yeah.
But then on the flip side, mm-hmm. David Letterman has signed up for 6 episodes of a talk show with Netflix in 2018. Yeah. So if you're a Letterman fan, that's where you can get your, you know,
Letterman fix.
Your Letterman fix.
Yeah. No, but speaking about that, since it's, again, it comes back to Netflix having original content.
Yeah.
So they're focusing on making their own things. Yesterday, we said that they bought Millerworld, which is the comics house,
right.
So they can produce any and all content that belongs to Millerworld that includes a bunch of other comics that they can pull from. So they're focusing on making their own content. Some of their original content that they've been working with Disney is the Marvel Netflix stuff, like Daredevil and Punisher, that has brought them a lot of subscribers.
Right.
We're not sure what happens to this content because it belongs to Disney, whether Disney is going to use these titles to pull people to their streaming service.
Of course they'll try that.
Yeah.
Right.
But the other thing is, the interesting thing is, does Disney want to give Netflix that much time?
Right.
Because if you give Netflix up to 2019, which is in about a couple of years, Netflix could become such a huge platform that you cannot ignore them and you cannot isolate yourself. Starting up your own streaming service might not be as smart as staying on Netflix.
Right.
Because they're growing at like a super... Like,
right.
What is the numbers? They're closing in on 100 million worldwide.
111, I think it was. Something.
Yeah. Something, I think the story we had last month.
Yeah.
So closing in on...
Super aggressive.
Yeah, 100 million subscribers worldwide and then a lot of original content.
Yeah.
So if they become a platform that is so strong in 2019 that Disney might lose a bit by moving themselves away.
Right.
So that might be something to think about.
And there was also this talk sometime last year, earlier this year, about Disney wanting to purchase Netflix.
Correct.
Yeah, that's another thing. So just last, up to like a couple of months ago, they had like negotiations where they wanted to purchase Netflix.
Mm.
Disney wanted to own Netflix. I think negotiations broke down. It didn't happen. And then Netflix just wanted to remain by themselves for now. And now this news comes out that Disney wants to open their own streaming service.
Right, which leads us on to the next piece about ESPN and their...
Right.
Owned by Disney, as we found out.
So I think, you know, I think I've got a bit of an answer to your question here. So we first heard about this whole ESPN standalone streaming service sometime last year when Disney acquired a minority stake in this company called BAM Tech. It's a streaming service company that focused on Major League Baseball. Now with Disney announcing a majority stake in BAM Tech, I think they spent like $1.5 billion on buying this majority stake. They're preparing to launch a dedicated over-the-top ESPN service. It will be the first time that a sports broadcaster has offered an independent multi-sport service that doesn't come with its own licensing complications. So streaming service for sports...
Worldwide?
Yeah. Well, it's going to start with the US first and then move into different regions. So for now... they'll cover like 10,000 live regional, national, and international games and events a year. So this includes Major League Baseball, Major League Hockey, Major League Soccer, and, okay, here's the good thing, Grand Slam Tennis.
Oh, interesting.
The only thing that's missing for now is NFL, but I'm sure they'll put that into the mix as well. And Disney says the service won't be spun out into a new app, but rather it will live inside the existing ESPN app, which means that everyone who already has the ESPN app who's watching scores, live scores, you know, and getting their news from ESPN, they'll be able to live stream all the matches that they want.
Right. You know what's interesting is I own a PlayStation 4, right? And one of the apps that comes readily installed is an MLB app, you know, a Major League Basketball app. A Major League Baseball app. And I think to myself, of all of the sports that I could watch here in Malaysia via my PlayStation, Major League Baseball is not the one I want to be watching. Why would that be a free service that they offer as opposed to anything else here?
But, you know, imagine how big it is in the U.S.
So in the U.S.,
it's huge. Yeah.
This is a big deal in the U.S. because you're going to get every other kind of sporting event available on your tablet or on your mobile phone or wherever you are, and it's going to be on a standalone. You don't have to pay cable, you know, for it, and you know you can just pay as you go if that's what they plan to do. Disney hasn't actually said how they plan to price it, but I think that information will come out soon. But here's the thing: one thing's missing though from this ESPN Live, this streaming service, you won't get ESPN programming, core ESPN programming like SportsCenter, which like sports fans like me, we look forward to. You know,
All right. Okay. Just to quickly go back to the the press release as well. I mean, and kind of talk around that just before we wrap up this talk set.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about how you signed up for a particular internet service and you got iFlix for free.
Yeah.
Certain Cellcom providers, Cellcom users, I know when they signed up, they also got iFlix for free.
Free. Okay.
So you know they're giving away these subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
Now Netflix have come along and they're doing pretty much the same thing. You know what? Where does that leave iFlix at all, if anywhere?
Yeah, but we don't know if Netflix is going to be free. So that's the other thing. iFlix comes free with Unify, and I think I was able to log in using my Maxis account.
Right.
So if you're a Maxis user, then you get iFlix for free as well.
But it also makes me question then, how many actual paid subscribers do iFlix have?
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. And then they're also going to, yesterday they announced that they want to expand on their local content with the 133 million that they got. So now it's kind of, you have to ask yourself, like, which is, how many more people are going to jump onto iFlix and how many more people are going to jump onto Netflix?
That's the thing, right?
If they get the chance to
subscribe. Netflix, where they are right now, you're given the choice of the two, where are you going to go?
Yeah.
Right.
But for local content, I think people will still go to iFlix.
I think so too. Yeah.
But Netflix is also coming up with local content. That's the thing.
Ah.
Yeah. They are also, I think they have a few regional movies on their catalog. There's some stuff, like, you can find a lot of Hindi movies. You can find a lot of Hong Kong movies in their list. So that's also there.
Okay, cool. Folks, if you have anything you want to chip in and let us know, Netflix or iFlix, whatever you want to talk about, do drop us a tweet. We are at BFM Radio. You can get us on WhatsApp as well, 018-789-8899. When we come back, we're talking about comics. Archie is going to make an appearance here on the show. Well, not in person. Oh, that would be nice. And Majida will speak for the first time in this entire show. Do not go anywhere. We've got some music coming up in just a couple of minutes. This is Blue Suede with Hooked on a Feeling. My word. Hang on a minute, I need to do this. BFM 89.9.
Business for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Majida Hashim.
And Audrey Raj.
So we've spoken about all things streaming.
Yes.
We're now speaking about all things flying.
Flying.
And teleporting and one thing or another. And we're going to be doing a little, Majida will be telling us about how Archie Comics are going to be rejoining the superhero game.
Mm.
What's going on, Majida?
Yeah, the key word here is rejoining. They were part of the superhero game and they're coming back. Now, for those who are uninitiated, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that Archie and Jughead and Betty and Veronica, they're going to start wearing capes.
No, we don't want that.
They're going to start wearing masks and they're going to fly around. They did that in the 1960s. The Archie characters did become superheroes, but they joined an event and were eventually overshadowed by characters from the Archie Comics universe. The Mighty Crusaders was a title created by Superman co-founder Jerry Siegel in 1965, and they introduced characters such as the Fly, the Comet, Fly Girl,
the Black Hood.
Yeah. Right, and they but the thing is that they only lasted 7 issues,
right?
And then they were cancelled. So there's an article here.
you paint a really nice picture. Yeah, they lasted and 7 episodes, and then they were cancelled.
Yeah, it got sad like super fast.
The good news is that they are making a comeback. There's a revival of the Mighty Crusaders, and it's been announced. And it follows a revival of other characters such as Black Hood and Hangman in recent years by the company's Dark Circle imprint. And they want to launch a new superhero team in a world that will be a bit bigger and than has ever seen before, according to the people who run Archie Comics now. Now, the thing is this. Right now, we have an overflow of all kinds of superhero characters and comics and movies going around. And people right now are more aware than ever about superheroes and about superhero comics. And some have risen to fame more than others. The question is, do we need more superheroes now?
Do we need Archie characters as superheroes?
Not Archie characters. They are people from the Archie universe. So you have like the Fly or the Comet, and they are coming back.
Yeah.
They have made some appearance in the DC comics here and there in the 1990s, I think. But they were not really big characters that people in pop culture would know right now.
Right.
And right now they're gonna make a comeback in the new Mighty Crusaders series in December.
So if we kind of rewind back into history of like Archie and the Archie universe, so they're around from the 30s, I understand.
Yeah.
And then they kind of had, they were pretty big in the 50s and 60s, as we know, and then overshadowed by a whole bunch of bigger comic book characters.
Right.
Went away for a little while, had a bit of a resurgence in the 90s, and then we ended up with Riverdale fairly recently, right? Which seems to me to be like a kind of young adult Twilight kind of gone wrong thing in a... an Archie universe.
Yeah, they're trying too much to be Gotham City, right, I think, right?
So what do we think they're trying to do there by bringing these mighty crusaders back? Are they just trying to jump on a bandwagon?
I think so. I think it's a business strategy kind of thing. It is a company that has been around since the 1930s. They've had spin-off here and there. They've had like Josie and the Pussycats. Right. They've had Sabrina the Teenage Witch. They've also had video games, and now they've introduced, like you said, Riverdale.
Yeah.
And Riverdale appealed to a darker side of things. I think a lot of people who are used to the bubblegum kind of Archie character and persona may be a bit iffy about how dark Riverdale has come across.
Right.
And the superhero trend is very, very big right now. So as a business decision, would it be a good thing or not to ride that trend, revive back the Mighty Crusaders, and see how much money they can make out of it?
Well, let's ask Wonder Woman. Audrey, what do you think?
I don't know. I still can't get over the fact. I can't wrap my head around how Archie, Betty, Veronica, Jughead, how these guys were called the Mighty Crusaders. You know, they're just a bunch of like
they were
silly
not
the teenage kids.
Yeah, they
know?
Were. Archie had this persona. He was Captain Pureheart.
Oh my
at
word.
One point, oh, right?
So, was he a Jonas brother as well?
but they joined the Mighty Crusaders. But of the Mighty Crusaders characters spun off on their own. They had their own stories and their own storylines. They appeared in DC here and there. And I think the Archie characters back then just faded out and the Mighty Crusaders went off on their own.
Right.
So I think,
crusading somewhere else.
Yeah. Mm. So these Mighty Crusaders would not be Archie characters per se, but the characters of the Mighty Crusaders themselves. So you're seeing the Fly come back, the Comet, Fly Girl and all coming back is as the Mighty Crusaders. Not Archie and Veronica.
Right, right. Because
right. Okay. I was just thinking, you know, Jughead's kryptonite would be burgers.
Burgers,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, I mean.
So you're saying that, you know, this is, they've become a bit obsolete, like slightly irrelevant. The comics, the Archie comics, I never got on board, so I'm not sure what the appeal ever was. But they're becoming slightly obsolete to today's generation, and they want to introduce something that people can relate to, like superheroes and
they
stuff.
They want a bit
just
of
jumping.
Shazam.
Yeah, they just
want
to jump on the, since we're in the golden age of all these like comic book movies and stuff. Is that what they're doing there? It sounds like that's what they're doing.
It could be it, because the Archie universe spans much bigger than just these characters, but because it's known as Archie Comics, they go back to this orange head boy thing.
Yeah.
And why not dust off these old comic characters and make a comeback through them?
I mean, it could work. Riverdale, I know, works, even though it's dark. Like, a lot of people watch that
but
show.
But does it, though? I mean, what are ratings and reviews like of Riverdale? I don't know any. Okay, I'll rephrase that. I don't know many people who watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that I know watch it tend to be either fall into one of two categories. Super hardcore Archie fans who have been reading Archie comic books since day dot, or young adults, you know, in that kind of 19, 20, 21 kind of you know, age bracket.
I don't know how well it's doing, like ratings wise. But then I know critically.
Arvin, you're the Netflix movie guru. You know,
this is one of those things that just just went over my head.
Right. Okay.
Kind of thing. Yeah.
Don't like it. But, won't look.
You know what's going to happen if they turn this Mighty Crusaders thing into a movie? Right. It's either going to go the way of the Power Rangers. Have you guys watched that one?
No.
Yeah.
The recent one. I liked it.
You like?
I liked it.
Of course, you
it's
did.
It's from your time.
It's from my time. Yeah. Oh no, he's back.
You got a cat for that. You got a cat for that. Right, it's time to take a very short break. When we come back, have you ever forgotten a password, right? And ended up typing in something anyway, we've done a story about that fella who made us spend an annoying amount of time trying to remember our passwords and trying to pass our passwords through. Anyway, very short break. It is The Angels with No Secret up here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. If you're wondering why there was a little meow there, of course, yesterday was International Cat Day. I'm in the studio with
Arvind Yuvraj,
Majida Hashim,
and Audrey Raj.
So today's we're going to pick up with this story here. The guy who invented those annoying password rules now regrets wasting your time.
Yes, he does.
And so he should.
Yes. How many times have you had to change your password and
so
had to think
many.
Of a special character
yeah,
and like add in like a numerical
number,
in there
yeah.
and like curse this poor man?
But we are are thankful now that, you know, our accounts don't get broken into just as much, right?
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, he didn't really do quite a great job. So here's what this article says, right? We've been all forced to do it, create a password with at least so many characters, so many numbers, so many special characters, and maybe uppercase, lowercase.
Yes.
You know? Then the guy who invented these standards nearly 15 years ago, this only happened 15 years ago, right? And he now admits that they're basically useless. Oh. And he also says he's very sorry.
Well, it's too late now.
Now he's sorry. Okay, let's just name and shame this man. His name is Bill Burr. He's a former manager at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. And in 2003, he drafted an 8-page guide on how to create secure passwords creatively. And he called that special paper the NIST Special Publication 800-63 Appendix A. Sounds like a password itself.
Yeah.
Right? So this document, okay, would go on to more or less dictate password requirements on everything you put a password on today, from your email accounts to your online banking portal, everything, right? And all those rules about using uppercase letters and special characters and numbers, all of those are because of Bill, and all of those are useless.
Why are they useless?
So here's the thing. When Bill came up with this guideline, he really didn't know much about how passwords worked. Okay.
Hang on a minute. This is the guy writing a paper on
he
it.
He was asked to write the manual. Come on, la. All right. Here too.
Okay,
so he was asked to write the manual. And he wasn't a security expert as well. So so he kind of admits that, he just had to put things together, you know?
He
had one job.
Well, it's not entirely his fault, because 15 years ago, there was very little research into passwords and information security. So researchers now can draw up on millions and millions of examples of the kind of passwords that worked. Mm-hmm. And what we know today definitely is simple math basically shows a shorter password with wacky characters, like what we're used to, like 6 or 8 characters, with uppercase, lowercase, special characters like we mentioned before, they are much easier to crack than a long string of easy to remember words. So if you were to put together a password that says Arvin loves Netflix always, that would be harder to crack. That would take about 500 years plus to guess, compared to just say if he puts Netflix on like special characters, like uppercase.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
and
interesting.
A number one instead of an I.
Number three instead of an E, those kind of things.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. So that would take about 3 days to crack. Like a small, a short word with special characters would take about 3 days to crack. But if he put together 4 words, you know, just a paraphrase or something that you can remember, like, I love a Nyan Cat. You see.
What, you love Nyan Cat? It's funny you should say that.
No, we should.
Funny you should say that.
I give
sorry.
Up.
Okay. I'm done. Carry on.
Yes. Yeah, you know, if you put something like that together, that would take 550 years to crack.
This is the opposite of what we've been told then, right?
Yes, it's the opposite of what Bill put together 15 years ago in that.
This is fascinating.
Report, yes.
Right, so has he written new guidelines? So Bill is basically saying, right,
he should stay away from guidelines
or any kind
of book.
He is 72 years old right now. He's retired.
And now you're making us feel sorry for him.
And he wants to apologize because he said much of what he did, he now regrets. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
This guy is like the equivalent of, you know, people who say don't crack your knuckles because it's bad, because you get like arthritis or something, but it's not. It's just like air bubbles.
Right.
So
yeah.
This is basically that guy in like password form.
Yeah, but for me, I mean, I think this Bill Burr guy, I think he must really feel bad, because if I was the one who came up with this password document
guide.
And a guide for like 15 years and made everyone like have to put together an 8-character special password, you know, I wouldn't want to put my name out there and say, hey, I was responsible.
Yeah. It's my fault.
I'm the guy you've been cursing all that time when you're trying to figure out a new password.
But the thing is that we are now stuck with his mistakes, aren't we? From everything from our email, passwords, Facebook and everything.
Right.
We are stuck with it now.
It's funny you say that, actually, because A lot of the kind of cryptocurrency wallets are now suggesting this. You know, write yourself a passphrase of five or six, sometimes eight, I think, random words and string them together. Yeah, so this kind of makes sense now, you know, because I was looking at that and I'm thinking, well, it would make more sense if I used a password like I've been told to use for the past 15 years, Bill. And now I'm being told that that was just complete rubbish.
Yeah, it actually says here that he invented it in the 1980s, well before the web was even invented.
Huh.
So he didn't. There was no internet or passwords.
A man clearly ahead of his time.
Right? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Way ahead.
Well done, Bill. But you know, thanks for coming clean in the end. Then I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We've got some Jet coming up with, ironically, She's a Genius. We'll be having a little bit of some more stories when we come back. One of those stories is about how you're never too old to code. An 82-year-old app maker from Japan. Great story. All that's all coming up in a couple of minutes. BFM 89.9.
Best for money. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up this show. My name is Rich Bradbury.
Arvind Yuvaraj.
And Majid Hashim.
And Audrey Raj.
Just a very quick shout out if you're listening over in New Zealand, Sven and Andrew, thank you very much for tuning in. They complained at me yesterday because I didn't give them a shout out there. That's a shout out for you. I went to university with these guys. They called me Uncle Rich. Because I was the oldest in the class, right? Mm-hmm. But now I've got a story here about an 82-year-old app maker. So I don't feel so bad. According to a whole bunch of news, in Silicon Valley, workers in their 40s are considered old by some firms. And according to some media reports, citing research from PayScale, the median age for an employee at Facebook is 29 and at Apple is 31. Mm. Are we all available to work in those median... I'm not going to ask any more questions. Anyway, there's this lady called Masako Wakamiya. She's 82 years old, and she first began working when she still used an abacus for maths. Today, she is one of the world's oldest iPhone app developers, a trailblazer in making smartphones accessible for the elderly. So she was frustrated by the lack of interest from the tech industry in engaging older people, and she taught herself to code instead of doing it all by herself. So the over 60s, she insists, need to actively search out new skills to stay nimble. And this is a really nice quote from her. It says, as you age, you lose many things. Your husband, your job, your hair, your eyesight. The minuses are quite numerous. But when you learn something new, whether it be programming or the piano, it is a plus and it is motivating. Once you've achieved your professional life, you should return to school. In the era of the internet, if you stop learning, it has consequences for your daily life. So she picked up this... what she started to do was code for a game called Hinadan. And it's this app where you have to take... it's based on a doll festival. And it means the doll staircase. And it takes place every March. And ornamental dolls represent the emperor. His family and their guests are displayed in a specific arrangement. Mm-hmm. So it's all about putting these characters in the specific place that they should be on a particular shelf. And it looks really interesting. Currently, it's only available in Japanese. But she has got plans to release it in English, Chinese, and possibly French versions. I really love this idea of somebody, you know, who at 82 years old has gone like, you guys are ignoring me. So I'm now going to take it upon myself and do this by myself. What great initiative, right?
Yeah. And to learn something like so new, like that's from, you know, like coding stuff.
Coding,
that, yeah. Stuff that even people in their early 20s don't know how to do nowadays. It's not compulsory for anybody to want to know coding.
Right. I struggle to teach my dad just how to navigate Waze.
Right.
This lady in her, in her
80s? 80s, yeah.
Has learned... by herself to code.
Right. By herself, that's the best
part. Take my hat off to her.
And it's brilliant because she's already met Apple's chief executive, Tim Cook. And she says, he asked me what I'd done to make sure that older people could use the app. And she explained that she thought about this in her programming, recognizing that older people lose their hearing and their eyesight and that their fingers might not work so well. Mr. Cook complimented me and said that she was a source of inspiration. She said, though, that writing lines of code is difficult, but she does, and she has no time to be sick. She just wants to focus on her coding and make clean and nice code.
And here's the thing. You would think that an app that was created by an 80-year-old might be skewed towards the elderly, but this Hinadan... It's essentially a memory game, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's quite interesting. And I think that's why it's been doing so well. It's received hundreds of positive comments from users. It's been downloaded like 42,000 times. Right, like you said, it's available now only in Japanese. But imagine when it goes big.
I mean, this is one of those things where you think, oh, I don't have time to do anything else. You know, I haven't got time to learn a new skill. Yeah. She learns coding at 82, didn't start playing the piano till she was 75. So, you know.
So what is your excuse? Yes.
Exactly. Oh, I'm going to get him for that.
No, I mean, not your excuse. I mean, like, what's anyone's excuse?
Nice.
We know what you meant, Arvin. We know what you meant. He's got to come back tomorrow, right? Let's find a story for Arvin for tomorrow.
See, if I don't come in tomorrow and something happens to me, you all heard this. This is proof.
Anyway, it is time for us to wrap up today's show. What do we start with? Oh, yes, we started off with the press release talking about how TM are boosting its content proposition with Netflix.
Yeah, and then, I mean, we also went into how ESPN is opening up its own streaming service as part of Disney's big idea to open up a bunch of streaming services.
Yeah, now that they've ended, or they at least plan to end their deal with Netflix and start their own streaming service.
Yeah.
And we went on to speak about how Archie Comics is reviving the Mighty Crusaders and is coming out in December this year.
Then, of course, we moved on to Mr. Bill Burr, who apologized for being the guy who invented those annoying password rules. And you know, he's now apologized and says that you know, he regrets wasting your time.
I wonder if we gave these password ideas to this 82-year-old app maker, what she'd come up with.
Something better than Bill Burr.
Yeah, that's going to be a name that's going to go down forever in infamy.
It's not even hard to remember. It's right. Bill Burr.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, okay, so that's what we've got through today. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, Dato Sri Mustafa Ali, Director General at the Immigration Department of Malaysia, was on the show this morning. He was appointed Director General of the Immigration Department in August last year, parachuted in from his previous position in the Malaysia Anti-Corruption Commission of the MACC. 1 year on, the grill does a follow-up with the DG on efforts to make good on his pledge to clean up corruption in the department, as well as the challenges in tackling border management issues, undocumented workers, and curbing trafficking in persons. That's all coming up after the news at 1. On behalf of myself, Rich Bradbury,
Arvind Yuvraj,
Majidah Hashim,
and Audrey Raj,
and it's time to say good afternoon. We will be back tomorrow, same time, so I'm so sorry. Same time, same place here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.